To our guest speaker for today, which is Joe, who is a medicines management nurse from Birmingham Children's Hospital, who has kindly agreed to present her work on improving the safety of medicines administration and something about the key challenges in this area. And I think, Joe, you might refer also to a topic of discussion on the MIS website around the use of NSAID. So shall I hand over to you, Jo? Are you ready to go?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here and to share some of the work we've been doing here at the Children's Hospital in Birmingham around medicines administration and improving the safety. And I guess it's sort of really a little bit about the journey, because it's quite difficult to sort of think about how and what we should focus on. So I want to show you some of the journey that we've taken, and I guess it's a little bit about the history of how we've looked at medicine safety altogether. And we very much started with our medicine safety group focusing on some of the things that we were knowing were going wrong and looking at what we could do to actually improve that. And So some of the things that we identified with from that was by looking at our medicines errors and incidents that had last required a serious investigation. And we identified from that actually some of the processes and systems that we had in place actually could do with improvement. So one of the major undertakings we started with the first priority, was actually our medicines chart, our inpatient medicines chart, about 5 years ago, had a complete overhaul of its layout and how we used the drug chart, really to reflect the changing needs of prescriptions, really, and the need for more information after we sort of started looking at errors and finding that actually quite a lot of the time the appropriate information wasn't there for the administrators to help them safely administer a medicine or understand all the full instructions around administering that medicine. And that also meant that actually with a changing workforce of doctors, obviously for the prescribers, there weren't the prompts there to help them remember what they needed to provide for each of the different sort of types of prescriptions. So the change in our drug chart actually allowed us to do that. We revisited it and looked at how we could change its format to provide the prompts it needed. We've done that with enormous success, really. We had a very, very positive response when we first changed over to the drug chart, have since been back and done new iterations, as actually we regularly go back and seek feedback for improvements on it. In fact, our latest version was done earlier this year, and we're now looking at it again in light of the new NICE guidance and how that we manage IV fluids and the prescriptions around IV fluids, to see how that fits with our new our drug chart and the amendments we'll possibly have to make to support the appropriate prescribing and management of IV fluids more directly, to support the our policy that's resulted from that NICE guidance as it's come out and the amendments we've done to reflect that. So I guess from our perspective, we started off very much looking at from those errors, but we started as an organisation really from our safety strategy to start thinking a lot more positively about learning from all of the times it's gone right. And this was really sort of prompted around the idea that we get it right more often than we get it wrong. And so there was these opportunities really to go and look at this. And I know that a lot of you will have seen the work around improving safety through that positive feedback and that reporting of excellence that from Adrian Plunkett, and I do believe that there's something on the MedsIQ site from a prescribing perspective about the work that's been done about that. We really wanted to adopt that from our medicines administration process. So one of the things that we did was very much go back out to our staff and say to them, okay, so what's troubling you? What makes it difficult for you around medicines administration? What are your priorities for us? What do you think we should be looking at? And we went back out and we engaged with our staff. And it was really, really clear that, you know, they came back with some very, very clear messages for us. And one of them was the sort of the standard of information available to them and its whereabouts. You know, so these were really simple things. So we had lots of guidance out there, but it tended to be tucked away on local pages, on local drives, or on paper versions. And so we set about sort of making sure that access to these was actually clearly indicated and available from all spots in the hospital. So we developed a particular way of putting everything onto our intranet, making it available, making sure it's version controlled, and something really simple so that both the prescribers who were referring to guidance when they were prescribing and the nurses when they were going and looking at it from a perspective of administration were referring to the appropriate documents and that that was appropriately controlled. So it seems really sort of quite simple, but it's amazing the things that you assume are being done that aren't. This was one of the first things that they prioritised. So it's been an interesting journey for us in terms of finding, as you know, it's that work imagined versus actually the work as done. As you think these things are in place, but actually when you go out and start looking and investigating, you find that there's little holes and gaps in the system that mean people can't get hold of the right information at the right time. This has enabled us to develop proper processes and systems to do that. I think the other thing that it's really allowed us to do as well is recognise that actually there's a huge amount of really good work going on across the organisation in little pockets, but we weren't actually able to really share that in a way that was people were able to then learn from each other. We were able to develop a specific intranet page and a group and a forum, which were actually medicine safety nurses, to develop that networking and to specifically tackle the priorities as they have identified across the organisation, so that we were working together on a common goal, but perhaps actually piloting and testing in different areas so that we could spread the burden and then also learn from other people's lessons and how they managed to their successes, but also where they found that they had met barriers. And that was really successful. And the first work that we started about that was really starting to look at actually reintroducing medicines rounds. And this was something that actually people had identified from an administration perspective. It was actually simply the time and identifying when drugs were written up and regularly going back and checking and seeing what had changed so that we could tackle our omitted medicines. So there was a bit of a sort of a combined effort. We did a pince movement from there was a groundswell of opinion that we needed to do something. That was definitely the feeling from the medicine safety group and across nursing as well. And so we jointly looked at actually the direction from the organisation was that we were going to institute drug rounds, reintroduce them on those areas that had stopped, and also then actually give people the freedom to implement them in a way that was suitable for their area. So we didn't say actually go and get this trolley, go and do it at this time, they should be 2, 3 times, 4 times a day. We didn't say any of that. We said in principle you should be having a drug round. This is the reason why we need you to introduce it. Find a way to do that that meets and suits your staff, the way that it works, the workflow of the ward, and works for the children. And so what we've got is we've got a whole range of different ways of doing a drug round, in that some people do it from a treatment room, and it's actually an allocation of staff to make sure that the drugs are given, and they go out one at a time to each patient and give their individual drugs. And for others, it's actually physically taking the medicines cart around to each bed space and doing it each bed space. And there's a whole range of things that people tried, and we went through around a year of people trialing and testing different ways of doing a drug round until they found one that was optimal for them, trialing different times of the day, trialing different ways of doing it, until they eventually found ways that would work. And then what they were able to do was to actually make sure that prescriptions fell in line with that there was guidance for prescribers so that drugs were actually prescribed at times that were appropriate, that could be managed on the drug rounds, and that we could work on things like interruptions then, and making it clear about, you know, that people that were managing to prescribe medicines and give medicines needed not to be interrupted. So in a way, lots of work sort of was able to fill that fall out of something very, very simple. And I think from our point of view, I think our lesson has always been that the success comes from when you give staff the opportunity to do it for themselves and find a way that works for themselves, rather than dictating. And once people realise that we were saying, do it in a way that suits you and works for you, we want you to adopt this because of the safety element, then actually they were very, very much on board.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jo. I wonder whether it might be helpful if people don't mind putting their phones on mute if they're not speaking, because there's quite a little bit of interference. And Jo, do you want to say a bit more about NFIT?
Yes, certainly. I mean, I don't know whether anybody's got any particular questions about anything that I've covered, or if they've got any questions. One of the big things that we're doing at the moment is looking at our double-checking process. But I don't know whether anybody else has had any successes in that perspective.
No. Does anyone have any questions or any comments so far on what Jo's been presenting?
I think it's brilliant. It's Alice speaking here. It's really, really interesting, because actually all of the problems that you're mentioning totally resonate with my own clinical experiences, and I'm sure everyone else's. And I think, you know, that approach of collaboration and having ideas and then suggesting it, but allowing the different clinical environments to implement them in the way that suits them is just exactly right. Because if you're too prescriptive and you don't actually understand how an individual ward works, then you're setting everybody up for failure and resentment. So that is fantastic. And I think it's really interesting that you've reduced medicines rounds. So on a purely just my own interest about how we change things in our own ward, that's a very interesting thought, because it feels like that's something we moved away from. But actually, if you're finding that that's improving safety because it's ring fencing the time and preventing interruptions and enabling people to really focus on the job, then that's a fantastic observation and intervention.
Yes, I think it has completely sort of revolutionised the way that we work, because I think very much before we moved to sort of almost this, you know, trying to optimise the care to suit the need of the family and the child. But there's a certain amount of fact that actually, unfortunately, they're in hospital and there's a system by which things are supplied and things need to be given regularly and the shifts. So it's false in many ways. And so what we do try to do now is strike that balance between actually, yes, we want to give individualised care, we want wherever to maintain your current routine as much as possible with children, but we do have to manage that safely, and so sometimes there's a compromise involved, and understanding that that's a conversation that it's okay to have, and supporting staff to recognise, you know, when are they making something safer, and understanding the things. So we did a lot of work around human factors, and we've been doing a lot of background work alongside medicine safety within the organisation around human factors and understanding how people are impacted by that. And getting people to understand that, you know, they're going to be vulnerable no matter how expert or knowledgeable they are. They will still always be vulnerable to making an error, because at the end of the day they are human. And I think that's enabled and given permission for people to test things in a way that perhaps they have felt they wouldn't be able to before. Is that actually they're now coming back and going, well, we've tried this way that has been recommended, but this doesn't work, so this is what we've done. Are you happy? And I'm going, and actually then it's not a question of being and saying, yes, we approve. We're going, actually, well, is it working? What's your evidence that it's working? Why do you think it's working? Can you identify those reasons and articulate that in an evidence-based way. It's demonstrating stuff that they're able to do that. You know, they're collecting audits of interruptions, for example, and being able to demonstrate that, you know, moving a drug round into a treatment room has helped them protect a drug round and stop interruptions, where previously they were getting lots of interruptions and the drug round was taking an inordinate amount of time and they were becoming stressed and potentially physically getting in the way in some of our very cramped spaces here at our hospital, where we've got a limited estate.
I think we all recognise that. That's really, really interesting. And I mean, you just mentioned at the end around double checking. So that's, you know, as a doctor and a prescriber, I've not, you know, often been very involved in the administration and the double checking, but I'm aware that there are real pros and cons around how you double check and how you don't just reinforce the error. And I was wondering, what have you done? How have you approached that?
I think what we've very much recognised is that actually, you know, practice varies across the world and even within the UK. And the accepted wisdom and actually within the nursing professional standards for medicines administration, we have a defined double check for higher risk medicines. For example, in paediatrics, they recommend a second check, but actually really they say actually for IVs as well. And so there's something there about actually them saying that actually for some medicines it's really critical that you do double check them. In our organisation, we have always had two nurses check all medicines before they're administered, regardless of its route or whether it's a critical medicine or not. And to a certain extent, that's meant that we therefore don't differentiate between very high-risk medicines, where you really need people to focus, and a suboutable nebulizer, which actually, you know, at the end of the day, it's actually quite hard to get wrong. And, you know, potentially the level of harm that you might suffer from it is very different compared to if you get an insulin infusion wrong that you set up. So there's definitely been a lot of discussion as we all get very much busier, as staff start to look at actually how are we spending our time, is this productive, is this making it safer or not? And we've had to go back and look at our evidence, and you know what we can safely say is that every administration error has been through a second check.
Really interesting.
Which the investigation of that, and we have to say, well, actually, what was that second check? Who checked it? What were they doing? Was it completely independent? Or was it the first person saying, this is what I've got. Can you see what I'm showing you? And the thing with that is that actually from a human factors perspective, we know we're vulnerable to hearing something and seeing something and then confusing them in our own mind. We don't know whether we've seen what we've heard or whether we're just agreeing with what we've heard. So it's very easy to get confirmation bias from being told what we've seen rather than somebody independently working it out. So we're aware that there's pros for using double checking, and there's also an argument counter to that to say actually if you're doing it yourself, that you take more care, you concentrate more because you're more accountable. Does second checking mean that you're not as accountable as if you were doing it by yourself? We've very much taken the approach that we don't know what the answer is. What we want to do is really look at that in a really detailed way. To understand the risks, because the research evidence actually is quite weak. In fact, it's extremely weak that's out there. You know, the what double checking as a process looks like is not very well defined. And when the research has been done, actually a lot of people have failed to define it to start with. So does double checking in one area, we know when we've looked at it in our own hospital that what somebody looks like when they double check it in one ward, you go to another and it looks completely different. what a double check looks like for an IV might look very different to what it looks like for an oral. If you've got more than one preparation being prepared at any time, several drugs, that alters the process. So what we're trying to look at actually, what are the safety critical steps, and is a double check absolutely necessary from the point that you decide to look at the prescription right the way through to the administration itself or setting up the infusion pump, for example. You know, what do we need to check, what's included in it, and what might that look like? And that's the work that we've really set ourselves at the moment. And we've been able to get some support from Warwick University and their Safer Clinical Systems team, who are doing this parallel to getting that expert information and support funded by the Health Improvement Foundation. So we're very lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, we really will watch for you for this space for the results of that, because I think that will be applicable to absolutely everyone. That's really fantastic work.
Thank you. Alice, sorry, I have a question here from Dr. Kumar Prashant from Sunderland Hospital, who unfortunately has a microphone that's not working. So send me a message. Can I just read out the question?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Hello. Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, Kumar,
yes.
Is that you?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, like I'm Dr. Kumar, actually I'm a pediatrician at Sunderland Royal Hospital, and I've also been a clinical governance lead for some time. And like this double checking is interesting because our trust hold the pediatric department in urology. We do double checking for all the medications, including IVs, oral, and even simple medication which are low risk. I raised it with my sort of governance department, trust, and pharmacy, and I wanted to reduce that because I did not see any impact of that in terms of reducing the errors. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. It's a very interesting point. And I think this is the problem, is that actually, for very often, is that actually we don't recognize all the times it goes right. We only ever see when it goes wrong.
If we look at the medicine and like sort of medical management in pediatrics, there are medications which are low risk and they need quickly prescribed, like sort of painkillers, paracetamol, ibuprofen, salbutamol inhaler, Movicol. Like these are the trimethoprim or amoxicillin. These are the medications which, in case even if no dosing happen, it does not cause a serious problem. I feel that if we five or six medication which are used in pediatrics and then do double checking for the rest of the medication, actually be more meaningful, because then people will realize that it is being done for medication which are important. There should not be any effect. There should not be a change in the medication doses. So, like, what is your view on all this? Because I have a strong view on that. Like, should be limited to the high risk medication rather than to everything blanket.
Yes, I absolutely get what you're saying, and I think that, you know, there's many of the people here within the organisation who are of the same opinion. I think that what we've done at the moment is, rather than go, actually, we think this would be the right way to go, what we're doing is actually going out and looking at, well, before we make any decisions about looking at actually which medicines should we be double checking, we've asked the question, what does a double check look like when it is safe?
Yes.
So we've started at a different position, if you like. That is very much something that we're considering. You know, do we look at the drugs and go, actually, well, that one is not ever going to cause great harm, no matter what we do with it. So therefore, actually, that does not need a double check. What we want to decide is, what is a double check and how does it differ from one person doing it? But, or is it that actually every person should do a self-check, which is a second double check, but they're doing it of themselves? So the project itself isn't limited to nurses doing it. In fact, actually, it's a multidisciplinary team. And we've got anaesthetists, we've got our radiologists, we've got staff who are giving any sort of medicine in different circumstances, some of whom, like our anaesthetists, for example, do not second check. They prescribe and administer without reference to anybody else.
They
are doing a self-check within that. So we haven't defined it even within our project as two people. We're doing it as a, what is that second check? What could that look like? Interestingly,
very interesting project, because it is something which obviously then not been done earlier, and also I feel like then you realize that what is the seriousness, like people. Hello, can you hear me? Sorry.
Hello, yeah, got you back again.
sorry about that. But I was saying, like, your project is very interesting because it's never been done like that anywhere, and it is going to give us a very useful information about whether the people, those who are doing the second check, they know what is the meaning of second check, whether there's a particular way to do it.
And I think that, you know, I mean, we've got a range of things. I mean, actually within our organization, we've actually been using pharmacy technicians a second person engaged in administering our medicines, and that would be oral and intravenous medicines. So in fact, we are already sort of, you know, looking and exploring alternatives to having a two-person nurse check, to be starting to look actually who is involved as well. But we felt that it was very important really just to define what is a safe second check and what might that look like in different circumstances. And rather than taking a very, very research-based approach, we've taken a very practical approach and gone down there looking at the safer clinical systems and looking at, you know, failure modes analysis and things like that, and really sort of starting to look about what is the evidence here within our organization as the things that impact on the safety, and have we defined those critical parts of the process that are impacted by those factors and controlled the risks there, so that people are aware that actually, you know, where are the really important parts, because actually a double check for doing an IV, that can take 5 or 6 minutes. Now we know from the all of the evidence about from looking at how we work as individuals, is that actually for a human to concentrate for that long and really focus, that's just not possible. We phase in and out. We can't concentrate for that long. So where are the critical points that people need to be focusing on? Where are those critical steps where things might go wrong? And is it okay to phase out at other times? And so these are the sorts of questions that we're asking of ourselves through this project, is starting to look at and define that in a way that is useful and can be shared. Because, you know, after all, it might be different in other organizations, but if we can define how we've gone about it, at least where people are in a position then to say, how does that differ for us? Does it differ, or is it actually very similar? And are the risks very similar? And this is what we can do about it, so that we've got that defined way of doing it. And once we've done that, we can then test the different methods of impacting and making different elements safer.
Brilliant.
I have actually put some of the medication, like sort of, I feel like MedIQ can have a bigger role in our sort of this aspect, especially regarding double checking, because lots of time is spent on double checking of all the medication. And from project, I think maybe the secondary outcome may be that you may start finding the medication which needs double checking and which does not. And if I look at the common medication which I put on this chat just now, like there are a list of 8 medication, and if you remove this 8 medication from double checking, we are talking about 89-90% of the medicine which does not need double checking. That means so much time is like spare and is available for the clinical care by the nurses, which I feel is valuable in today's environment, particularly when we're short of people and short of resources. What is your view, and what is the view of the group? I think other people, those who are listening, what is their view about it?
I'm very sorry. I wasn't able to catch most of that. It's particularly bad line at the moment.
I'm just wondering, I think
sorry, from what I caught, it was, can I
can I just say what I think I heard? And then I think it was a question from MedsIQ about identifying which medication should be double checked and identifying those which for not for double checking. Is that correct?
That's right. Like my aim is that because we are talking about the medication safety, and when we talk about the medicine safety, like if we actually define the medication which does not mean double checking, that would be actually more meaningful. That means we are trying to avoid double checking with low risk medication, which are almost like 90%. It makes 90% of the treatment on the board.
Okay, so I think that was that 90% of medication are safer and don't necessarily need double checking. And can we help identify which ones do? Is that correct?
That right. Line.
Yeah. Okay.
I've also put it in the like in my chat also.
So, do you have any comments on that?
And I from my perspective, is actually certainly something that we've considered looking at it, but we're not at a position where we felt that we would be able to move to that.
Right.
Because what we want to be very clear is that we're basing it on evidence of actually we are making it safer for those medications if we do that. And I think we would want to trial it. And to do that, we would have to have a defined effective double check before we'd be in a position to test was it safe to stop doing what we're doing now.
But do you have an idea of is this double checking done in throughout the UK or is it just in few units? Do you have any idea any on this?
So the professional advice for the medicine standards for paediatrics for nursing is that in high-risk areas, which paediatrics is considered a high-risk, is that they recommend double-checking. Within different organisations, they have adopted a sort of a stratified approach to that. So for some organisations I have worked, oral medicines were never second-checked. In some, actually, only the very common over-the-counter medicines were not second-checked. And so there's a variety of different options being taken across the country with regards to whether to check all or some.
Is there any data available on this? Have you looked at it?
I'm sorry?
Have you looked at it? Like, is there any data available on this aspect? Like, what are the units doing, and is there published data on this?
Well, I think most units that sort of are doing their own thing. We've only broadly looked at it because we've not collected data on that. But actually, it varies and it changes with time. So, a lot of the time, this is a local choice about the local risk of giving that, given their local population of children and the children that they serve and the types of instances in which they would give it. So I think, you know, yeah. While you might think actually, you know, paracetamol is fairly harmless, you know, given in local paediatric general DGHs and the doses that you're giving in our tertiary centre where we've got a lot of liver patients actually spread throughout the hospital, we're perhaps giving higher doses for our surgical patients post-operatively than we would find in the BNF as part of our pain control. Actually, paracetamol for us is actually higher risk in our organisation. Mm. It's also one that we would have a lot of errors with. So,
I think that's a really interesting point.